Welcome back. Hope you've all had an enjoyable lunch. It's 2:05. I'd like to pick up where we left off this morning. But just before I do that, I'd like to give you a little bit of advance notice to the applicant. We will be asking for a position statement on... Sorry, that sounds terribly formal. We would be asking for the latest position that you have with consents and licences with Natural England. So I thought that if we raised it now, you might be able to get the information before the end of the session from your colleagues. Mr. Horton, you're looking worried.
So, forgive me for just asking for clarification. Are you saying by that you were asking for the wider context of discussions with Natural England in addition to the specific questions that you've raised?
No, what I'm asking for is what is the latest position with applying for consents and licences with ESP licences?
Oh, forgive me, yes, understood. Yes, thank you.
Right. Thank you.
And option not covering the stuff we did yesterday, because I know you've given us an update in terms of protection provisions and bits and pieces, so not the whole thing, but just relevant to this hearing.
Thank you. So moving back to the agenda on ornithology, I fear it's going to be a bit of a one-sided session. But I'm more than happy to include MMO if you feel like it. So I fear that the session is going to be really an update from yourselves on the latest position that you have on the various topics that we'd like to discuss between yourselves and Natural England. So I think that probably the easiest thing is if I pass over to you. To the applicant.
Thank you, sir. Yes. Mark Trinder, who is named, I thought for one moment he wasn't named on the list, but on the hard copy he's on the other side of the page. Principal ornithologist with MacArthur Green Limited. And so he is here to speak on ornithological matters, and if I may, I'll hand over to him to take you through, if you like, both the context of where we are, the broader context in discussion with Natural England, and then address your specific items in the agenda.
Yes, that'd be helpful. Thank you.
Mark Trinder for the applicant. So as my colleague John has just said, the idea was to give some background first, if that would be useful, on where we've got to following the original submission and the current status, and then through your list of questions. So.
Yes, that's fine.
In the first instance then, we have had a couple of discussions with Natural England following receipt of their relevant representation, and have produced an updated assessment which we consider addresses all of the points raised in their relevant rep. That document is currently with Natural England for review and to get their comments on it, and our intention is to submit that to the Planning Inspectorate at deadline 3.
Deadline 3?
That's on the basis of when we expect to receive comments back from Natural England and providing updates on that basis to ensure that this is a final version of that document.
That's the 19th of December. I understand the problem. If it is possible to get that document agreed before that, I'm thinking of just deadline 2, that would be very useful.
But perhaps if we say that, yes, if we can, we will provide it at deadline 2. That will be somewhat dependent on the
response you get from Natural England.
Absolutely.
So can you just remind me what the actual document is? I know that you've liaised with them since their relevant rep. What is the document that we are discussing here?
Mark Trinder, on the applicant. This is an update to the ornithology assessment, addressing all of the points in their relevant rep.
Okay.
Okay.
I just ask the so in Natural England's relevant rep, then there was, they had a sort of coded assessment of the issues that were still outstanding. So will the document that you're talking about include those issues?
All the issues.
Okay.
Will be addressed.
So Natural England is going to submit that one of a version of that to us at every deadline. That's what it said.
Oh. Yes, this is their issues. Yes,
their issues log.
Yes, correct. Yes, yeah. This is what they've told us. Yes, issues log. Yeah. So.
So if they're updating that, then perhaps that gives you something to work on in terms of the document that you're talking about.
That's correct. Although, since they actually have the document as well, we will get comments directly back on that. So the two will be aligned, I would imagine. Yes.
Thank you.
And I think the challenge of the deadline 3 as a proposed response is that it provides not a great deal of time to understand and analyse and absorb what's in that document in terms of preparing for the hearings in January and getting out an agenda in advance of that. So while I hear what you're saying about and trying for deadline 2, and I think we would ask for it by deadline 2, which is the 10th of December. Not a lot of difference between deadline 2 and deadline 3, but it would make a difference in terms of our ability to respond to it as well and prepare fully for the hearings later that month with the inevitable issue of Christmas in the middle.
Sure, Mark Trinder. That's fine. I guess there's the caveat that we might not have been able to address any, depending on the extent and nature of comments, which we hope will be minimal. But obviously, that we can't be sure of that at this stage. So I guess there is a risk that will then be resubmitted as a second version at some point later in the examination.
Yes, but nonetheless, a half-baked cake is better than no cake.
Noted.
Right, moving on. Continue.
Right. Yeah, that's with me doing it. So that's the updated assessment and submission to the Planning Inspectorate. On the nature of the updates that we have provided, we feel it is very pertinent to say that this has added to the levels of precaution in what we consider to be an already highly precautionary assessment on the basis of the methodologies and the approaches that the Natural England request that we use. I mean, this is discussed within the document, both in a general sense and also in specific reference to various points through the assessment. And really, I think that the take-home point is that while each of these individual elements of precaution can be justified on their own, and I'll go into some of the detail, well, not too much detail, I hope, I don't want to lose my audience, but the real problem we feel is when these are added together and you end up getting further and further away from any sort of central ground, if you like. So adding on upper confidence limits to the upper end of a range of values that's been requested, and this kind of addition of three or four elements through the course of reaching a conclusion on the assessment is when things can start to move very widely away. And as an example, one of the assessments which I'll mention as we go through the questions, you can end up with an impact magnitude 20 times higher on the basis of Natural England's approach compared with one that we consider retains precaution, but is one that actually reflects a more accurate position.
I think I'm quite happy that I appreciate that. It's putting factors of safety on factors of safety. I think the only thing I would comment on is that I understand adding more precautions onto more precautions, but that is different from cumulative effects.
Absolutely. It is. Yes, cumulative would be when we're adding projects together.
Yes. Yeah.
This is a within assessment, but there are different precautions that come into play depending on whether it's a project alone assessment or the cumulative one, and there are different aspects. And again, I'll mention these as we go through. So that's really the key message, I think, in terms of that update that we consider. And in terms of the key points that have been addressed, I will just sort of very briefly summarise those, but then I think it's probably the remainder will come out through responses to the questions that have been raised. Amongst them are the fact that the apportioning of Kittiwake to the Flamborough and Filey Coast SPA population, we have now provided a range of up to 100% during the breeding season as requested by Natural England, even though, and this is one example of the precaution, this is in fact based on a single year of tagging data with 18 individuals involved, only two of which actually entered the Boreas site, and in fact each of those only did it on one occasion, and there are various issues with how the data were collected, which I'm aware the RSPB don't agree with these criticisms, and I'm sure they would be very willing to present those if they were here. However, those issues remain a relevant point to raise, and the period of this tagging study was only for about 3 or 4 weeks towards the tail end of the breeding season, and so the relevance to the other months of the season, for example. So that's one example of the precaution that we consider has been added. Among the other requests that we provided is, again, this presentation of assessment using upper and lower confidence intervals on the populations recorded on site. And then we have also reviewed and updated the figures we have applied for other wind farms in the cumulative and in combination assessments. So that's all been undertaken. One aspect which is relevant to the first item discussed this morning, under item 7, this question of the Hornsey 3 implications. One of the requests that Natural England made in their relevant rep was for us to present assessment with and without Hornsey 3 included in our cumulative and in combination. This was exactly the same approach that they asked for at Norfolk Vanguard, and allowed them to present conclusions on that basis with and without. The relevance of that to the current Boreas examination is that that should mean that you have the information available to be able to reach conclusions depending on how that determination for Hornsey 3 ends up going. So all that information should be there, as it is for Natural England, as it is for yourselves. The one aspect that we have not been able to address that they requested, which is an add-on, I think, is to provide stochastic collision modelling outputs. So these are simulation based with randomised input parameters. The approved method for doing this is a tool which was developed for Marine Scotland recently. Excuse me. And unfortunately this tool is still not actually working properly. I have raised questions with the developers, but when I have tested it, I've found that there are errors between it and the previous basic version that which operates within an Excel spreadsheet. And so on that basis, and again, we have discussed this with Natural England, they're well aware of this fact, the outputs from that model have not been presented. The important thing to be aware of, however, is that the mean estimates, as presented in our assessment to date, will be the same as those you get from this stochastic model, because the means will remain the same. The only difference is that you're sampling all of the other parameters in a sort of a joint sense, so you get a sort of combined probability distribution around them. So in terms of the conclusions that you would draw, certainly on the means, and in fact we have upper and lower confidence intervals anyway, derived from population density and this sort of thing. So they're unlikely to differ very much is really the take-home message.
Can I just check, have you discussed this with NE, with Natural England, and are they in agreement that the result from the means will be more or less as would be from the statistic model?
I don't know if we've specifically if I've specifically asked that question. I have discussed this matter of the model with them and said, look, we can't do it because it's still not working, or at least not working properly. I don't know if they would completely agree with that. I can't think why they wouldn't, because that's the nature of the data that go into it. So there should be no reason for them to disagree with that point.
I think it would be useful to clarify that with Natural England, and we're quite happy to include that as a first written question. Yeah, and the follow-on from that is, do you have any idea when Marine Scotland will have their model fixed?
No, I don't, I'm afraid. I mean, that was back in September that I raised this point with the company that actually did the work for Marine Scotland and the relevant project officer at Marine Scotland. And when I last checked, which was earlier this week, there were still no updates on this situation. So I don't have any update, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I appreciate it's outside of your control, but it's tantalising that it's almost there, and it would be helpful to the examination. But if you could keep that under review, it would be helpful.
Certainly, yes.
Right, thank you.
As I said, I think the key thing to note is that I think any conclusions that you would draw currently would not be changed by this.
So. Yeah, well, we'll see what Natural England say. Okay. Thank you.
Yep. I think that was all of the sort of contextual points that I wanted to make in the first instance.
Yep.
So we can progress through your questions.
Yes.
I guess for the sake of the record, perhaps it's useful to read these out, isn't it, as we go through. So 5A, which was to understand the differences in approach in assessing impacts and effects from the project alone on displacement for red-throated diver and guillemot. In the first instance, this is addressed in the update. So that additional information which they have requested, which was in relation to use of confidence intervals and displacement rates. We have now provided the extra information that Natural England requested on this, and our conclusions remain the same in the update as in the original ES assessment. And this is one of the examples of the large differences. The guillemot particularly, if you consider an assessment based on the mean density, our estimate of an evidence-based rate of displacement, which would be 50%, and an evidence-based precautionary mortality of 1%, compared with the upper 95% of density, a 70% displacement rate and a 10% mortality rate, you end up with an impact that is 20 times higher. Mm. This is a classic example of where, if you start adding these things together, and although this isn't a specific point on this question, then you have the next level, which is to use the precautionary population model rather than the more realistic one, which is then the sort of the icing on the precautionary cake.
Okay.
Any other thoughts on 5A before we move on?
Not at the moment. Again, I think it very much depends upon what's in your updated assessment. and Natural England's view of that. So I think, if you can move on to B.
Sure.
I think, again, just as a general comment, my own concern is particularly for combined and in combination effects, because I think, as we heard last night, and we are all aware, there are a number of projects happening in the area, and we are continually eating away at the bird population. So we just like to make sure that the in combination effects or the combined effects of projects are being effectively considered. And the writer to that as well is, I know there has been some debate between the parties on which projects should be included and which should not be. But that's just a general comment to just raise the issue of North Sea becoming a little bit crowded.
Okay, well, so I'll respond to those points before we move on then,
yeah.
Because they're rather more general. In relation to the cumulative and the in combination, a very relevant point in that respect is the which is another aspect brought up in the report that we're receiving, is this the difference between the built wind farm designs versus their consented designs and the reductions in terms of impacts that are typically seen due to the nature of assessments obviously having to capture worst case design parameters. And work that I have done previously has found that the typical reduction in collisions is in the order of 40% when you move from the large number of smaller turbines to the fewer larger generating turbines, and that the reduction from one turbine or rather the increase in risk from a small turbine to a big turbine is rather small, but the saving of removing turbines is considerably greater, and so the net effect is this overall reduction. And when you start adding this up across the cumulative, as you say, the number of North Sea wind farms, this is a serious reduction that is gained. I appreciate there are issues in terms of securing these aspects, but there is a biological realism here that is lost in the mix, unfortunately, that means that this doesn't get carried through into the assessments. I feel you had a second general point, and I can't remember what it is.
I think that makes two of us.
I'm sure it will come back as we move on, so I'll press on. So the next question.
So I think it was which projects, I think, was the question.
Oh, yes, that was right. Thank you. That's why we have a panel of five.
With respect to the number of projects involved or which ones to include, this was something that Natural England brought up in their relevant rep. They requested several additional wind farms to be included. They were either ones that are a considerable distance away or quite small. Some, for example, consisting of one or two turbines or demonstration sites in the Firth of Forth and something. Nonetheless, they have all now been included in the list. So all of the wind farms that Natural England requested are included, and we have also reviewed the figures that we presented for all of the sites to ensure that they correspond with sort of agreed numbers across these different projects. As you can appreciate, numbers change for wind farms as you go through this process, and so keeping track of this can be a challenge. But yes, yeah, so we have gone through, and those have all been updated.
And does that include, have you also considered French and Belgian wind farms in that assessment?
We have not not included those.
Yeah.
For the main reason being that we have not been asked to include them. That has not been part of the request for additional information. However, for another reason, which is that assessments differ across member states, and it is actually extremely difficult, if not impossible, to obtain equivalent numbers for the impacts in the same way that we undertake those assessments. So this has not been possible.
Okay, thank you very much.
I think that was all of your general
yes.
points. So if we move on to 5B, so an update on the assessment of combined and in combination effects of collisions and displacement for the project alone and cumulatively for Gannet. Again, and this will be a common theme, this is in the updated assessment which you'll be receiving. We did have some of these because there are essentially four aspects to each species assessment: the EIA alone, EIA cumulatively, HRA alone, HRA in combination. We did have the HRA in combination. However, Natural England have requested all of the other aspects, so those have all now been provided. And again, our conclusion of that assessment is that there is no significant or adverse effect as a result of this assessment.
Okay, thank you. Can you remember offhand what the mortality rate is predicted to be?
I'm afraid not. No, as you'd appreciate, there's an awful lot of numbers in here.
Yeah.
No, I can't remember the specific details, I'm afraid.
I think this would be something. Is it in your document?
Absolutely, yes. All of this is laid out in extraordinary detail.
It's a big document.
So yes, no, this will all be there, including the population modelling on which we base that conclusion.
Okay. No, thank you.
Okay. Shall I move on to?
Yes.
So 5C. So this is the issues around cumulative in relation to the number of wind farms assessed and potential missing projects for red-throated diver, razorbill, and guillemot, which I think is largely addressed already in the comments we made about the extra wind farms now included. I think the only additional component for that is in relation to red-throated diver, although this might be one that covers another question. But this was a request from Natural England for a like-for-like assessment, which was an approach presented for Norfolk Vanguard, which uses the challenge with red-throated diver, and this is in the southern North Sea area particularly, is that a lot of the wind farms included in the assessment are relatively old, and the ways that figures and assessment were presented has evolved quite dramatically and become much more quantitative over the last few years. And this means that it's rather difficult to combine wind farms in a sensible and proportionate manner. The like-for-like approach gets around this by using a generic seabird density population, spatial models of the seabird density within the North Sea area, a piece of work that I was involved in for Natural England several years ago, and then from the GIS data layers you can extract the population within each wind farm. And so this is on a level playing field sort of approach. And having done this, you can see what proportion of the impacted number is within each sort of tier of wind farms. So operational ones and ones in construction and planned ones. So this has been provided. It was undertaken for Norfolk Vanguard, and we've undertaken it again for Norfolk Boreas. The the overwhelming message of this is that something in the order, I think it's more than 95% of the impact is actually on operational sites. And so projects which haven't been built yet account for about 2 or 3%, I think, of the total. And that includes Norfolk Boreas. And then when you look at the size as well, there's an even more stark effect, which is that the relative size of these wind farms compared with their impact is out of proportion. So these small old wind farms, when you compare them on an area basis, have an even greater effect again relative to the current planned ones, which are larger and further offshore. But partly this is because red-throated diver have a very coastal distribution. They prefer shallower waters nearer to the shore, and so the projects, as they get bigger and further offshore, have a smaller relative impact. But all of this is in the update.
Yes. I think it's even more important we receive the document earlier rather than later.
What were you doing for Christmas?
Okay.
Yeah. So the next question, 5D, is considering the conclusions on significance from cumulative impact on seabirds during operation. I confess to being slightly unsure of which impact specifically. I'm assuming this relates to collisions, but it's not stated.
No, it is collisions. Yeah.
That was my assumption. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. And in respect of that, we have the key thing again was the list of wind farms included, and as previously stated, we now have increased that list to include all of the ones requested. On the basis of that, our conclusions again have remained the same, that this has not changed our conclusion that there is no significant or adverse effect as a consequence of this. And then moving on to 5E, understand the concerns around conclusion of no adverse effect for lesser blackback gull at the Old Ore Estuary SPA, both alone and in combination. With respect to the project alone, Natural England had made a request that we increase the number apportioned to the SPA. So this is of the birds that you consider to be present on the site during the breeding season. How many do you think have originated from a given breeding colony, in this case the SPA colony? However, when we discussed this in detail with Natural England, it actually turned out that this was an error, this request they'd made, and we had in fact provided the range that they were interested in. So we haven't had to update that aspect.
So just to confirm that then there is no outstanding difference of opinion for the blackback gull.
With respect to the number apportioned to the SBA,
right? Yes. Yeah.
The other request was for upper and lower confidence intervals, and that has been provided. Okay. So those relate to the project alone. With respect to in combination, well, again, this comes back to the list of wind farms that you include. But also how you apportion numbers to those other wind farms included in that assessment. So while we've gone up to 30% for Norfolk Boreas, the question was what value should be used for these other wind farm sites. In the original assessment, we applied the same upper, well, in fact, the 30% is the upper rate, the Natural England. We actually think Boreas will be rather lower, more like about 12. For the other projects, many of which are closer, we have used a 30% value, and this is an area that Natural England disagree with. However, we have based that on a detailed review of the populations present in Norfolk and Suffolk with the potential to be present on these wind farms. So the relative population sizes are such that 30% of the Norfolk and Suffolk population is at Old Orr. Therefore, that's what we consider an appropriate value to use. So that I think will probably remain an area of disagreement with Natural England. We are confident in the evidence that we have used on that basis, and Natural England have questioned it. But so there is no further discussion of that point in the ES. There was a considerable amount of discussion in the original HRA document that provides the evidence for this, but it's not an area that we anticipate revisiting.
So that's an area where you expect there will remain disagreement?
I think so, yes.
Okay.
The other request was inclusion of East Anglia 1 North and East Anglia 2, or at least an update for the figures for, which is obviously very relevant to this particular aspect because these wind farms are in close proximity to both the SPA and Norfolk Boreas. And again, that is something that we have been able to do because their final submission figures are now available, and so we are able to incorporate those. So that's another aspect that we have addressed for Natural England. And so the final thing to say on that is that our conclusion again has not changed compared with that in the original assessment, which is we don't consider there will be an adverse effect for the project alone or in combination.
Right, yeah. Thank you for that. I think, again, we just need to wait for National England's response and the document. Before going on to RSPB's concerns, one other thing I did pick up from Natural England is whether an LSE should be screened in for the seabird assemblage for Flamborough and Filey Coast SPA.
Which I believe is the next question, 5F.
Sorry, my computer's gone. Yeah.
So, assuming that you want to move on to that question then, in relation
yes,
to the seabird
yeah.
assemblage. The question of assessment of the seabird assemblage is also one that Natural England have raised, although the reasons for it between Natural England and RSPB are slightly different. With respect to the RSPB, they consider that the assemblage should be assessed because one of the species included in that. So I'll take a step back. The seabird assemblage includes gannet, kittiwake, guillemot razorbill, puffin, herring gull, shag, and cormorant. Oh, and fulmar. Sorry, don't forget fulmar. And we have assessed impact individually for gannet, kittiwake, guillemot, razorbill. And the remaining species we have not assessed because they either were absent from the wind farm, so that's shag and cormorant because they're very coastal in their habits, and herring gull because their foraging range doesn't extend as far as Norfolk Boreas, although we would argue that for some of the other species too, but that's a different point. And puffin because we had virtually none. There were records in February and March, and the maximum population estimate in March was 23 individuals. And when you actually apportion those on the basis of the non-breeding percentage you'd expect to be Flamborough birds, that equates to 0.1 puffins. On that basis, we consider that there's no likely significant effect on puffin from Flamborough. And all of the other species for which there is potential for LSE from Flamborough, we have assessed in their own rights and done a detailed assessment thereof. With respect to the RSPB's position, which is that we should assess the assemblage because of the puffin impact, well, we argue there is no puffin impact, therefore we don't need to assess the assemblage. Natural England have requested assessment of the assemblage, but they've accepted the argument that puffin are not at risk of LSE or any impact. However, they have asked that the assemblage be assessed as a feature in its own right. And essentially the same arguments apply. We say, well, we've assessed all of the individual components for which there is risk of LSE and concluded no adverse effects. And so that applies also for the assemblage. And so there is a difference of opinion here. It's also, I think, fair to say that this isn't something that has been attempted for any other wind farm assessment, as far as we are aware. And I have done a fair bit of researching to establish that. And it's far from clear exactly how this might be done in a robust manner anyway. So for a combination of reasons, we don't consider, mostly that we don't think there will be an effect on the assemblage. That's our position on that.
Have you had any response back from RSPB?
We have not discussed this matter directly with the RSPB, apart from within the statement of ground. So the discussions through that, where we laid out our reasons on the puffin respect, to which their response was, well, we still think you should do a puffin assessment. So that remains an area of disagreement. So no, we haven't taken that any further.
Okay, thank you for that. And again, I presume chapter and verse is in your report.
With respect to the assemblage, currently the version with Natural England does not contain this. If we do, then it will probably be a discussion on why we consider that to be an unnecessary assessment.
I think it's something that we would like to see anyway, whether it's within the report or as an additional submission. I hasten to say, but another post-meeting note. But I would like to see your considerations of why it's not possible to do an assemblage assessment. Maybe. Yes. We will include it as a first written question.
Noted.
Pleasure.
Okay. Does that deal with that question? I think it probably
yes,
does.
Thank you.
So on to 5G. To understand the concerns around the conclusion of no adverse effect for Gannett and Kittiwake from Framber and Filey, both alone and in combination. And I think this largely, again, is addressed in the updated assessment. All of the aspects specifically raised by Natural England, so again, this came down to the list of wind farms to be included in the in combination, and with respect to Gannett, the additional combined collision and displacement, which as a footnote, obviously, not obviously, we would consider that to be another source of precaution, because an individual is unlikely to be at risk both of collision and displacement simultaneously, and so we consider that as a risk of double counting in terms of this assessment. However, all of those the points raised by Natural England have been provided, including this raised range of apportioning for Kittiwake, for example. That's all in there. And as related to that as well, there was a request for some analysis of the age classes of Kittiwakes that were recorded on the wind farm site in the aerial surveys, which we have undertaken and provided that as extra information within it. That analysis has actually revealed very little of useful information, because it's in fact rather difficult from the imagery to distinguish certain age classes. Kittiwakes are considered adults at the age of 5 or thereabouts, and while first year birds can be distinguished. And this is, if you imagine, this is from top-down imagery. So on the feathers, on their backs, and on the top of the wings. However, for birds aged 2, 3, and 4, it's actually extremely difficult to make any robust distinction. So in fact, it doesn't really reveal very much. What it tends to show is rather high levels of adults, but we don't consider this to be a realistic conclusion. And there are various reasons why that are set out in this particular analysis.
Okay.
So the next point is 5H. So this is concerns around conclusions of no adverse effect for razorbill from Flamborough and Filey in combination and alone. Only in combination, because Project Alone, Natural England are in agreement that there is no adverse effect. And this similarly is covered and is due to the list of wind farms included. So that assessment is included and is with Natural England for their review. And the next question, which is the same one for Guillemot, the same answer applies. We've included the extra information and we await Natural England's response on this. I see that 5J appears to be one that I've already answered, because this is RSPB's questions about puffin. So I think we've addressed that, I would say. 5K is concerns around adverse effects of a red-throated diver at the Greater Wash, specifically in combination. And again, this is the like-for-like request from Natural England, which, as discussed, is now provided. And our conclusion on that basis is that no adverse effect on this particular feature. And then the final question here is in relation to Little Gull at Greater Wash, and this is a collision risk. This was a request for assessment using the upper and lower 95% confidence intervals, which has been provided. And in the in combination aspect, some questions over the figures that were used for some of the other wind farms and an update for East Anglia 1 North and 2, both of which have been included now. So that assessment is up to date on those respects. And again, our conclusions remain that there will be no adverse effects alone or in combination.
Okay, well, thank you very much indeed for that run through. And just to summarise, as far as you're aware, have you now provided all of the outstanding information that Natural England have been requesting?
With the one exception of the stochastic.
With the one exception of the
stochastic. With the one exception of the stochastic collision model. I believe so, yes.
Right. And again, just to be very clear, in your reassessments, have you changed any of your views on
AIOU.
I keep wanting to put the U in.
Yeah. IOU. Oh, thank you. No, our conclusions on adverse effects remain the same. We don't consider there will be any adverse effects either for the project alone or in combination with the project.
Right. Thank you. Well, obviously, we have to wait for your report and Natural England's response. And again, as I say, we will be considering cumulative or in combination effects very, very carefully. Now, can we go back to an update on the positions for consents and licences with Natural England?
Thank you, sir. I think we'll ask Claire Davis to address the questions you have on this.
Yep. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Claire Davis on behalf of the applicant. So I believe the request is with regards to the European Protected Species Licences. The section is covered within the outline landscape and ecological management strategy, but as an update to that, a draft application was submitted with regards to the Great Crested Newt licence to Natural England, and on the 9th of September they did issue a letter of no impediment for that Great Crested Newt licence, and that our intention is to append that licence for your information in the updated OLEMs, which will be issued at deadline one. With regards to other species licences, the bat surveys that have been undertaken to date haven't identified any bat roosts and therefore haven't identified the need for a bat licence at last time. We appreciate that there is still a number of structures and trees to be surveyed. They are identified within the OLEMs, and that we will revisit the need for that licence following the completion of the pre-construction surveys. There are no other European protected species licenses that have been identified. There has been a need for identified of the displacement of water voles that will be required. That is undertaken under a class license. So that's a slightly different licensing system, and therefore will be undertaken by an appropriately licensed person at the appropriate time. Anything? Any other updates you'd require? I think that.
Yes, please. Could you? We will include a first written question on this, but could you ensure that at 213, which is the document which has consents and other licences, it's wider. It's not just the protected species and so forth. But could you include an update at deadline two? But we will put a question into that effect, and then we can keep tabs on where we're getting to with those.
Yeah. We can do that.
Okay, thank you very much. So I think we are now on to item six, which is comments on the DDCO. We did have a long session on this yesterday, and I think we did cover quite a few points that MMO were concerned about, and we are obviously following those through. I'm not aware of anything additional that I'd like to raise at this time. I don't know if MMO would like to raise any.
Rebecca Reed, MMO. No additional points at this time.
And do the applicant have anything additional to add?
Victoria Redmond on behalf of the applicant, nothing further.
In which case, well, just before I hand over to Ms. Fernandez, I can confirm that yesterday's action items are being published today.
And just to follow on from that point, so we will, what we have done with yesterday's action points is to generally put the deadline as deadline two. I think there's only one or two instances when we're proposing deadline one. And today we have taken actions. We'll publish those in the morning. Hopefully, well, I won't guarantee the morning, tomorrow. And again, we're following the same strategy of deadline two, unless we specifically need it earlier. So that gives you all a little bit of time to do the doing. And we'll publish those tomorrow, hopefully as soon as possible.
Thank you for that.
Moving on, is there any other issues that anyone within the room would like to raise? If not, then I'd like to close. Thank you all for attending and taking part, and I'd close the meeting at 3:00. Thank you very much.